poem that I think every preacher should read at least 3 or 4 times a year, and probably should read on a fairly regular basis to those who are subjected to that preacher's preaching from time to time. And it's a poem written appropriately, 20 letter James uses the image of a farmer. So this poem was written by a contemporary farmer, who's a little bit more than a farmer, also a poet, essayist, and novelist named Wendell Berry. And the poem, this little short poem that Wendell Berry wrote, is called Warning to My Readers. So it might be called Warning to My Listeners for a preacher. Wendell Berry writes, "Do not think me gentle, because I speak in praise of gentleness, or elegant, because I honor the grace that keeps this world. I am a man, as crude as any, gross of speech, intolerant, stubborn, angry, full of fits and furies. That I may have spoken well at times is not natural. And wonder is what it is." So I think every preacher needs to read that poem this morning, because the writer of the letter, James, begins our reading this morning saying, "Be patient, therefore, beloved." The farmer waits for the precious crop from the earth, being patient with it. You also must be patient. As an example of suffering and patience, beloved, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. So do not think me patient, because I speak in praise of patience. I am impatient and short-tempered and occasionally a little bit irritable, just like everybody else. No members of my family are here this morning to contradict me on that. There you go, I organized it well. Sunday would concur, I can assure you. It's not an easy commandment, eh? Be patient, therefore. And I think what the first thing we need to understand about patience is that it's not something we can aim at directly. Okay? You cannot make, well, you can make if you want, but it's not going to work. It's not going to work to make a New Year's resolution to be more patient. Okay? I'm going to be more patient, starting now. It's like really all of the Christian virtues. They're not things that we can aim at directly. You cannot determine simply to become more loving. I'm going to be more loving. Have you ever been loved by someone who is determined to be more loving? It's kind of yucky. You can't just determine to be more compassionate, to be kinder. They're not exercises of self-will. Paul calls them fruit. Fruit of the Spirit. You cannot generate fruit. You ever seen a tree sweat trying to produce fruit? It's just a natural flow of the tree's life to produce an apple. So we can't aim directly at patience. But there is something, I think, which the writer of the letter James tells us we can do that will help us get there. He says, you also must be patient. But then he goes on and says, strengthen your heart. So that is something we can do. We can strengthen our heart. and out of a stronger heart, as an overflow of a stronger heart, comes those qualities that we hope to manifest in our lives. So as our hearts grow stronger, we become more patient people. We become more loving people. We become kinder and more compassionate. Not because we're working at being patient, not because we're determined to be more loving, but because that's what strong hearts do. Strong hearts are patient. Strong hearts are loving and kind and compassionate toward others. So, how do we get a stronger heart? Well, you want to ask the Heart and Stroke Foundation or somebody, I don't know who this is, Bell. Anybody know who Bell is? It's in your pew leaflet. This little diagram, something, whatever it is, illustration. Bell, I don't know who Bell is. Bell Mobility? They care about strong hearts? Okay. I don't know. Anyway, whoever they are, they have four tips for growing a strong heart. But I actually want five. So I've added one at the very top, because it's my favorite. And I actually think it comes out of James, and it comes out of the word itself. The word patience, the Greek word that James uses, is makrothumeo. Makrothumeo. Makros is long, and thumos is passion or anger. Long passion. Long anger. That's a strange concept, eh? But it moved over into Latin as longanimus, which was translated into the commonly used English word that I'm sure you all use on a regular basis, longanimity. You all used longanimity recently? No? Anybody ever heard it? It's a pretty unusual word. And it's not one we like very much, I don't think. Because it means long-suffering. And then became in English just patience. Patience is long-suffering. Impatience is not wanting to suffer. Impatience is wanting to put away those things that make us feel awkward or uncomfortable. But you can grow a strong heart if you're not willing to suffer. Sorry. There's no other way to get it. In fact, if you look even at Bell's four guidelines, four tips for growing a strong heart, I'll tell you what. They all hurt. Do more cardio. Yay! I just love it. You know, it's 6:30 in the morning. It's pitch dark outside. It's cold. The ground is wet. I don't want to go outside with my headlamp and run around the Cedar Hill Golf Course. It hurts. But it's good for my heart. And so, mostly, I do. But I don't really enjoy it. I enjoy it a little bit more in the spring and summer, but in December, I don't want to do it. I want somebody else to do it for me. But it doesn't work that way. Cardio involves pain. It's just a reality. Or flip over to the right-hand side of my little diagram. Stop smoking. I quit smoking once. Well, that's not true. I quit smoking 32 times, and then finally it took. I was 22. I wasn't going to do it. I didn't want to do it. But the beautiful young woman I was about to be married to told me that she'd never kiss me again if I didn't quit. So it's kind of, choose your pain, right? The pain of quitting smoking, or the pain of never being kissed again by your beloved. Well, kissing one. But quitting smoking was one of the hardest things I have ever done. It was painful. It hurt to quit smoking. Manage your stress. Oh, that's no problem. That's easy. Or not. Managing your stress is hard work. It's painful to manage your stress. Have a balanced diet. That hurts too, you know? If I had my choice, I would eat salt and vinegar chips and drink. Coke? No, I don't think I drink Coke anymore. But I eat salt and vinegar chips all day, that's for sure. And how good, and chocolate cookies for dessert. How good would that be for me? How would my heart handle a diet of salt and vinegar chips? Not so well. So, having a strong heart is going to involve accepting, embracing, indeed welcoming a certain measure of pain. You know, the first noble truth of Buddhism is that all existence, you think I'm pessimistic, all existence is dukkha. Dukkha is suffering, anguish, pain, unsatisfactoriness. All existence. Buddhists made me seem like a happy, cheaper kind of guy. All existence is dukkha. All existence involves, I actually like the last translation best, a degree of unsatisfactoriness. You ever found that? Life has a tiny measure of unsatisfactoriness in it? If it doesn't, you're not paying attention. Certainly not paying attention to politics on an international scale. Because there's a measure of unsatisfactoriness to that, it seems to me. So it's going to involve accepting a measure of pain. And when we do that, then we become able to do more cardio. We become able to exercise. And the fundamental exercise of growing a strong heart is Advent. Advent is about waiting. Growing a strong heart requires the willingness to wait. The farmer waits for the precious crop from the earth. How do we wait? How do you wait? You wait tapping your foot. You wait clenching your jaw. You wait pacing up and down. How we wait affects dramatically how we receive what's coming. You know, if you invited company for dinner and they're a little bit late, it happens on occasion. And if you are waiting with vast impatience and irritation that is growing into a little fireball of rage, and then finally they arrive and open the door with a big smile and all the noise. What do you think? You think you've gotten rid of all that uneasy energy? You think you've just abandoned all that irritation and irritability? No, it's still there. And you know what? We're going to feel a little bit. So as we wait with an open, expansive heart, that heart grows stronger. If we're going to grow a strong heart, we may not need to stop smoking, but there's something we're going to have to stop. There's something that we're going to have to simply let go of. The best waiting we do is when we are still. When we stop. Stand. So it's why it's so beautiful to me when the children come up to the front and I ring that bell and they really do stop. They're just still. And quiet. And we need to learn from those children. But we can do that too. And that when we stop, and when we are still, and when we wait with an open heart, our heart grows strong, and that strong heart begins to pump patience. It begins to pump love, and compassion, and kindness that surges through our bloodstream. we're going to grow a strong heart, we need to manage our stress. And I think the problem we have with thinking about managing stress is that what we often tend to think that means is we have to organize, orchestrate, and control the circumstances of our lives. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't y'all love to organize, orchestrate, and control the circumstances of your life? How's that going? Doesn't work. Can't do it. Doesn't matter how smart we are. Doesn't matter how capable we might be. It doesn't matter how good we try to be. There is going to be something that comes in from out of left field and puts us into uncertainty, into doubt, into confusion. And it may be the weirdest little thing. Can I tell them about Eliza? So you take your 5-year-old child to a routine optometrist appointment, right? And the optometrist says, "Wow, this child has the most light-sensitive eyes of any child I've ever examined." "Oh, that's odd." And the optometrist says, "You must take them to an ophthalmologist." A pediatric ophthalmologist. And the pediatric ophthalmologist looks inside your 5-year-old child's eye and says, "There's something in there. And it's been in there so long that blood tissues are growing over this object." "Whoa! What do I do with that? Good thing I'm in control of my life." You take a deep breath and you think about your 5-year-old child who is probably for 8 months been wandering around up to a year with something that they said at the time was a piece of metal in his eye so that the eye has grown over it. He hasn't complained, he hasn't made any fuss, but it's been in there. And so they say, your child has to go for surgery right now. And they suggest that it will be yesterday, and it wasn't, but it was this morning. And somehow, I'm not asking for details, somehow they got that little something out of Elias' eye, and it's not metal, they don't know what it was. An unidentified flying object that went into his eye, and it's all out. He's going to have to take his home now. Well, he was in, yeah, he had to have a general anesthetic because he's kind of a movable little guy. And so he got it out, and he's totally fine. He'll be home soon, and it's all lovely. Think about being forever. They used to be young, now they're not. Who could dream that up? Who could imagine such a crazy thing? Well, we're really in control of everything. We got our day planned out, and it includes going to surgery with our 5-year-old child that's something taken out of his eye. No, it doesn't work that way. We are not in control. And that's why when James encourages us to have patience, He links it to some event, to some presence. When he talks about having a strong heart, when he talks about being willing to manage our stress, strengthen your hearts, he says, for the coming of the Lord is near. Beloved, do not grumble against one another, or against life, perhaps. Because the Lord is here, there is another force, another power that is present here, now, in your life, in this moment. And you can trust that. You can trust that power of love and strength that is here. So we're going to wait. We're going to stop and stand still. We're going to recognize the limitations of our control. And finally, we're going to have a balanced diet. farmer waits for the precious crop from the earth, being patient with it until it receives the early and late rains. It needs to receive something, and so do we. What is it that we are putting into our spirits? What are we feeding ourselves? What are we nourishing ourselves with? What are we nurturing ourselves with? Are we trying to sustain ourselves on a diet of salt and vinegar and potato chips? Or are we nourishing ourselves with light, with beauty, with truth, with goodness? We were here yesterday for the children's pageant. We saw such a profound illustration, it seems to me, of beauty and light, goodness, innocence, and purity. Just here, filling this place with that spirit of love and light that is embodied in Jesus. And you know you went away yesterday afternoon feeling nourished, feeling so, not because you learned something new, but because you had eaten a diet of goodness. You'd eaten a diet of life and light, purity and truth. That is what sustains us. And that is what creates a strong heart, a true heart, a noble heart, heart out of which flows patience, kindness, goodness, peace, and joy. So don't try to be patient. Don't try to be joyful. Don't try to be good. Try to have a strong heart. Try to have a strong heart by standing your ground, by opening to the reality of your circumstances as they are, to living in this moment, and opening to the reality of pain and suffering and uncertainty and doubt and confusion, and not needing to control it, because you know that that which is within you is greater and stronger and more true and more real than anything there might ever be outside.